Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Tego. Every other week, we'll delve into the world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
So welcome to the show, Lillian.
Thank you.
You're my first, I just moved to Seattle like 2 weeks ago, and you're my first official interview.
Yay!
In Seattle.
Lucky me.
In person, so that's great. So thank you for joining us. I'm really excited about this particular conversation because one of the reasons it took me so long, so my husband lives in Seattle and it took me a long time to make the decision to move here because I was nervous about not finding like Africa. I know it's a, but it's a big reason, not finding African food options. And so I remember when he met you about a year ago, like he said, oh, there's an African food.
Now you have
there's
no
excuse. Nigerian food here. I was like, okay. So, I mean, I will delve into that whole, into Seattle as a place for discovering African food, or even West African food specifically. But let's start by first talking about you. Who's Lillian? Tell us about where you grew up and all that good stuff.
Okay.
How did you end up here today?
First of all, welcome to Seattle.
Thank you.
I think you love it here.
I mean, today it's a beautiful day. I mean, people can see, but we're sitting like right by the water in an area of Seattle called South Lake Union. Yeah. There's expensive boats on the water.
Enjoy it. It gets depressing really quickly.
Yeah, so it's a really nice day in Seattle.
It is. Well, Lillian, so... I am Nigerian, of course, from the Benue State in Nigeria.
Okay.
Yeah. And I speak Idoma language, which is a tribe in Benue State.
Okay.
Yeah. So I grew up in my village, so to speak.
Yeah. not Lagos, not Abuja, none of the
glamorous areas. Yeah. I grew up in a place called Apoga.
Okay.
Yes. And because it's my grandma lives in a place called Idobe,
okay,
which is actually where I stayed, you know, spent most of my time growing up as a child, because my mom was a working mom, yeah, and I had to live with my grandma.
Oh, interesting. Like, what did she do?
She was a petty trader.
Oh, okay. Yeah. She was really busy.
She was a busy person. Yeah. She always, she loved to work with her hands. She's dead now, of course. And I really, really miss her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, she did something. I don't know if you know, do you know locust bean?
Yeah.
Okay.
We call it dawa
dawa. Yeah. So, in Idoma, we call it okwehe.
Okay.
Yeah. That was her trade.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
She used to make that from scratch and, you know, I would help her. It was a laborious process, trust me. But and then she would sell it in the market that was just about just a minute away from her house. And I used to go help her sell in the
nice.
Market.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you started the food business.
I know. in fact, I paid really close attention to her growing up because she's like the best cook ever. She could use two ingredients to make something really, really nice. Yeah. So, and my mom was a nurse. She's retired now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, she spent a lot of time working. Yeah. And, backstory. So she got, my parents, I'm from a divorced home.
Yeah.
So my parents got divorced when I was, 3 months old.
Yeah. Yeah.
we all grew up with my mom. Yeah. And so my grandma would take care of us when she was, working. Okay. Yeah. So that was fun.
And then how did you end up from the village? So I'm sure you end up in a big city before you, in a big city in Nigeria before.
I did. Yeah. So I was born in the village, of course, but my mom moved from the village when she got transferred to the city. Yeah, in Otukpo.
Okay.
And so we went to the primary school there. And then she got moved to, again, transferred to Boko, okay, which is another city in Benue State. And again, we went to school there. Yeah. And then she got transferred back to the village again. And the one thing my mom always did, you know, Nigerian parents with school, they have this whole attachment to, you know, you have to be academically excellent, you know. So she spent a lot of resources getting us into the best schools. Yeah, it was her thing, you know. And she would supervise us each step of the way, you know. So it was really fun growing up. But when my mom got transferred back to the village, I had to go back to school in the university in Benue State.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is where I started my whole adulthood. Okay. Of course. Yeah.
What did you study in university?
Communications. Okay. Mass communications.
How did you pick science? I always ask this question. How did you pick communications?
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, like even you said, you just said like how, you know, Nigerian, and it's across the board, African parents, I feel like I can generally say this, African parents, like you're going to be a doctor, of that stuff, right? And so there are specific, you know, you do science or whatever. So I'm always interested when people do something that's different.
My mom really wanted me to be a doctor. She really wanted that. But seriously, between you and me, mathematics, not my thing. So it's a silly story. Growing up, I mean, once in a while, it's not like we didn't really watch television all the time. You know, once in a while, it would work. And my mom would make us, like, watch the news. And I would look at these newscasters and I was like, man, this is so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, to be on television and be seen by people all over the world, like, so cool. So, I know, silly enough. That's interesting.
I think I always thought I wanted to be like Christian Amanpour on CNN, but I never even thought, oh, communicate. Anyway. Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
So you did communications and then came out of school to, so you worked in media, I guess?
Yeah, I did communications, went for my youth service, you know, the 1-year youth service in Nigeria. Then I came back and went right away for my master's. In communications again. Okay. See how serious I was about communications. Yes, and I majored in public relations and advertising.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Then I went, my sister was living in Abuja then. Okay. So I went
moved to the big city.
Because I mean, the dream. So I did get, I didn't get a job in communications right away. I got a job in a private school.
Oh.
Yeah, I taught first graders.
What?
I know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Wait, so I guess it's Nigeria, it's Ghana, those things.
It was an expensive school, so it was nice. You know, it was a private school called Peace Setters.
Okay.
And I loved working with kids. I mean, a little bit frustrating, but it was rewarding. Yeah, it was really nice. And I mean, it trained me, like really, really made me patient. I like to think it prepared me for the media job I was going to get. So I got a job in the media, eventually, in a newspaper called Leadership Newspapers.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in Abuja.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you do as a media? Like, what did that mean?
Yeah, working in media? I was a writer.
Okay.
So I was a reporter, a correspondent.
Oh, interesting.
I covered the EFCC, which was the Crime Commission in Nigeria.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. That was my first assignment.
Interesting. Yes.
And I did a lot of special reports. You know, funny enough, it was at that point I realized that the stuff I wanted to do in communications had nothing to do with television.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because okay.
I was more of, you know, the behind the scene writer, you know, photographer.
Interesting. Yeah,
and I just, I really was, at that point, I was no longer interested in television.
Okay.
Yes, so I did that. And then I got, 3 months, I got awarded reporter of the month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for some pieces I did. And I got promoted. And
so then you stayed in that for...
I stayed in that for, I was there for 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then overall, you were in media for...
Totally 5 years. Okay. Yeah. And then, actually less than 5 years, okay. But I left there as when I was managing editor of digital platform.
Cool. Yes. So then how do you go from there to Seattle?
Oh yeah, good question. It's the guys, they always do it. Yeah, so I met my fiance then. Okay. who was here. He's from he's not from Seattle, but okay. He's lived here for over 25 years.
Oh
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so
he was in Abuja?
I was in Abuja.
But he was here.
He was here. We met online.
Oh wow.
I know, that's a story for another day.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, but we met on Catholic Match.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, we got talking,
yeah.
And I had to attend a conference in the UK, okay. In London,
yeah.
At that time. So I went to London for the conference, and he was like, you should fly down and we should meet.
Oh.
So I said, okay, because I'm crazy like that, right?
Wow. That is a story.
So I came into Seattle and, you know, met his family, his friends.
Oh,
and
my
everybody.
Goodness. At this point, how long? I feel like we're coming into a dating show. How long had you been dating or talking by the time you first met him in person?
Before I met him. Yeah. It was probably 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So like 4 or 5 months, okay. Yes. And but you know, I was really my job kept me really busy in Nigeria, so I barely had time to socialize, hence the online dating, right?
Yeah.
So I came here, I was here for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, you took your time to move down to Seattle.
Yeah.
I think I agreed to marry him because I came in September. The weather was nice. I didn't get to see all the, you know, all the depressing Seattle rain and everything. Yeah.
That is funny.
But I was here for 2 weeks, and before I left, he proposed.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, okay.
Oh, that's a good love story.
Let's do it. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the backstory of how
you
moved
ended up in
Seattle. So
okay.
I had to, you know, I left my job at the media.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I told my boss that I was going to move, and we had a good relationship.
Yeah.
I had a good relationship with my boss. He was really, really strict.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I told him, he said, you're going to leave your job.
Funny.
I'm going to marry somebody you just met. Are you sure? And I said, yes, sir, I'm sure. He said, anyway, you're crazy. That's okay.
That's a big leap of faith, man.
It was. And, you know, I moved to Seattle.
So this was 5 years ago now?
This was 5 years ago. A little over 5 years ago. Yes.
Yeah,
and,
so it worked out.
It worked out. And, I mean, it's been crazy, trust me. It wasn't at all a smooth ride. Yeah, it still is not a smooth ride. But... I'm thankful.
Yeah. So what's your first impressions of, so you came back probably around what time of the year was this when you came back?
Came back to Seattle.
Yeah.
Came back the second time.
Yeah.
It was in August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's still a nice
August.
Time.
It was
yeah.
still nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was right before our wedding.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had the traditional marriage
in
Nigeria.
Okay.
You know how we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he had to go to my village. For sure.
Oh, that's true.
He had to go to my village, and so he came with his family to Nigeria.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we did the whole, you know,
what did they think of Nigeria? I feel like coming from Seattle, even like it's so calm, like everything here is so calm, and then even me, like someone, I'm from Ghana and I'm speaking specifically about Lagos, like it just seems like so much. Like it's an attack of the senses almost.
I will do you one. See, I am Nigerian and Lagos is so much for me.
Yeah.
I've been there twice.
Yeah.
And you know,
interesting.
Each time I just went did what I went to do, and then out because it's really crazy. Yeah, yeah, you see, it's so my brother-in-law and my and his wife came for the traditional marriage. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law couldn't come then because my father-in-law was sick at that time. He passed now. So they came to Nigeria and they loved it.
Yeah,
but they didn't go to Lagos.
Right. So
they
came
to Abuja. I lived in Abuja. And the traditional marriage took place in Otukpo where my dad lives. Yeah. So they came down and, you know, they loved it because people, Nigerians are friendly.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a warm welcome. Yeah. You know, they don't have to know you.
Yeah.
They say hello to everybody, especially if you're a foreigner. That you cannot take away. Yeah. The spirit of hospitality.
Yeah, that's true.
So they loved the attention and they loved the food.
Yeah.
They stayed for less than a week.
Okay.
But it was a fun stay for them.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was hot. It was the one thing. they were all sweating buckets.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, they were probably ready to go by the time.
It was good crazy, stuff. Like scorching hot.
So you're back in Seattle and living. So let's get to, why did we start Niger? Like, what was the impetus to start Niger Buka? Because when you came back, you were not working, right?
No, I was not. I had to go through a whole process, almost a year of waiting for to get a work permit and all that. And I did, when I came in, my mindset was to go back to practice, go back to what I knew best.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes sense.
And I applied for a few jobs after I got my permit. Yeah. But nothing was really panning out. I was getting a lot of, jobs for offers for managing blogs and that kind of
thing. Yeah.
But it wasn't challenging enough for me. And I just wanted, so I decided, I mean, when you put my passions in a row, you have writing, writing communications, and then you have fashion.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then you have food somewhere hiding at that time. Because never in my wildest imagination did I think I would be doing this right now. So I started applying for jobs in the fashion industries, and finally I got
fashion industry to do what?
So I wanted to
do media and fashion?
No. I wanted to just sell clothes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because it was fun.
Yeah.
Because I loved shopping.
Yeah. Okay.
And I wanted to just take that job and hang on to it while I figure out, I wait for something better to come along in the media. So I got a job in Nordstrom. In downtown Seattle. Okay. Yeah.
And then you did that for a while?
Yeah, I did. Oh, I did. I showed up to this job and I was really nervous. Trust me, I was really, really nervous about doing this job because for the 1 year I had spent in Seattle, I had to repeat myself 100 times to people. It's like, okay, say water. And we Nigerians are like, I want water. And then I say, I hear people saying, I came out Seattle, and I will ask my husband, pronounce this word, and you say Seattle. it was a whole learning curve. We come from British English,
right? Yeah.
So it was like unlearning British English
starting American English. Yeah.
And I got a job in the dresses department where I had to converse with people, sell them clothes. Yeah. Nordstrom is not like other stores where you walk in and just put people in a room and go away. You have to give them the whole experience. Yeah. So on my first day on the job, I was nervous. Like I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know if I walked up to people, if they could understand me or anything. But I also knew that I had to make money.
So
I walked up to my first customer and I said hello to her and I tried to speak slowly.
Yeah.
It's something I have learned that we're coming from that part of the world. The best part, the best way to integrate is just speak slowly.
Yeah.
And let people pick it out. So I said hello and I offered to help her and she said, sure. Victory number one, baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough that I had really good teammates. You know, I had Sarah, I had Bridget, I had all these people that were willing to, you know, show me the ropes.
Okay. And this is commission based, right?
Commission based. Yeah. So you have to sell.
Yeah.
So I ended up selling her an entire outfit that day.
That's on your first day.
On my first day on the job.
Okay.
Of course, with help from my teammates, of course. And then after that day, I kept on moving. And by the end of that month, I was highest selling employee.
Oh, nice.
And until I left that job, I was highest selling employee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then 3 months into the job, I bagged the Pace Setters Award.
Oh, what? Yeah. Look at you.
And then I got promoted to personal stylist. And, you know, on and on.
People are listening.
It was fun.
I have a personal stylist.
It was fun, really. It was fun working at that job. I mean, it was commission-based, but I think it's fun because I was really good at, you know, at the job. Yeah. But again, the takeaway from this whole thing as relates to Niger Buka is that the one thing that I learned from Nordstrom is the personal experience, you know, the service experience. Yeah. Before then, I had no idea that, you know, you had to, you know, in quotes, suck up to people, customers, you know, to attend to them in such, you know, in such a wholesome manner. And that is the one thing that Nordstrom taught me that, you know, going into business, I have applied to Niger Buka because it's really important.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that, especially here, even back home, but I feel like I've said it so many times that people probably think like it's my, but it's true. I think that we don't do enough on the experience piece, right? There are people that are trying to do better on even just the service component, but like thinking about the end-to-end experience is not something
talking
that
about
we,
like African businesses,
our businesses. I mean, totally it could be food, but it could also just across the board.
I totally agree with you. And when I went, my first point, you know, when I wanted to start Niger Buka, the first thing I decided was, this is not going to be business as usual.
Yeah,
it's not going to be the African style of doing business. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I mean, to anybody listening to me, I am African, I am Nigerian, proudly, and I say it everywhere. But seriously, when it comes to service experience, to customer service, just the general way of being, of treating people as they should be treated, we are not 100% there. We are barely there, actually. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so Nordstrom, and then I got pregnant.
With
my first daughter, and again, it was cool. Everything was fine until the 8th month. I was working like a whole shift.
Okay.
When I was 8 months
oh,
pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, it was an 8-hour shift on your feet.
Oh my gosh.
You know, you took like a half time break.
Yeah.
You take 1 hour break and come back and keep going. But because of at the point I was at my business, because I had so many clients that were coming back and asking for me, I had to go a lot of times. I had to go without that break.
Interesting.
Because I would be on my way to break and I would literally look up and it's like, thank God you are here.
Oh,
okay, I need so-so dress for so-so thing. And then I'll have to go back.
Well, I need to check this. I mean, this is going to be a slight tangent, but I will come back. So, not like when you can go into Nordstrom and have like a personal stylist, do you have to pay extra for the service? Okay. Sorry, guys. I'm just.
You don't.
Interesting. Okay,
yeah, it's true.
And then you sort of form a relationship with this person.
Yeah, you can. I mean, if you are good. Yeah, I had, it was, and I, Nordstrom, if you're listening, you should pay us.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. So you could, I had, you know, you're just on the floor standing and people come in to buy something.
Interesting.
and you are obligated to walk up to them and ask how you can help.
Yeah.
And, you know, take whatever they are grabbing off the rack and put in a room for them. So it's not just them carrying, lugging their stuff around.
Interesting.
And you check on them in the room
to
and you're
see,
like,
well, do you ask them, like, what are you here to shop for and all that?
You ask them and you help them.
I should do that because I actually don't like shopping at all.
Take advantage. So to go
into a place like that would be good for me.
Take advantage of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And you can book an appointment online to get the stylist.
See the things I learn. This is a slight distraction. Okay, so 8 months pregnant in Nordstrom, busy.
Yeah. And then, so I had to stop working because at that point, at some point, you know, that's, I couldn't wear shoes anymore. You know, the whole, my foot were like huge. Yeah, so, and I had to take some pressure. I had to take time off. So I left Nordstrom. I took my leave, my maternity leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, went back home to prepare for the baby. And that's why I never went back. Yes.
Why?
Okay, so to start, it's really expensive to get childcare.
Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah. That's the big,
You know, that is the thing I miss most. It's the thing I miss most about Nigeria, about Africa, because I am here, out here by myself.
Yeah.
And my whole clan, my family, my 110 family members are back home.
Yeah.
You know, so, for instance, when my sister had her kids, my elder sister, I would, during my break from school, from the university, I would go home, go to her place and help her with the kids, right? It's not even something you have to ask.
Right.
It's something that is expected. So it's second nature to us Africans to take care of people, you take care of babies in our families, right? But I don't have that kind of support here.
Yeah.
I was all by myself, you know, doing this for the first time and freaking out. And being sleepless and everything. It was it was crazy because at that point my mom couldn't visit because she wasn't feeling well. So it was, so it was basically me, my husband, and trying to navigate this whole thing. So when it was time for me to go back to work, I knew I couldn't because to start with, I didn't want to work to pay
your child. Yeah, it's exactly, that's essentially that's what you would end up doing. Yeah.
It just didn't make sense to me. Plus, I was going to miss her so much. And it's my, the story of my life is a clear, it's just a clear example of a metaphor of how life is so unpredictable. Yeah. See, I always thought I would be a working mom. I always thought I would be, you know, like the, you know, the dress, heels, briefcase kind of person, right? And, but at that point, I just knew I didn't want to go back. It was, I was certain I did not want to go back. And, I started thinking, I thought, okay, maybe I could sell, you know, do my own brand of clothes, do something. But again, it didn't really appeal to me because I am not a designer.
Right.
I suck at drawing or anything of that stuff. I'm not good at drawing. So I didn't see how it was going to happen. So my next passion was food.
We've gone down the line.
I know, right? And it's funny because even at that point, I still did not think that this would happen. But when I was at Nordstrom, once in a while, because I moved here and the very first thing I noticed was that there was no Nigerian restaurant.
That was a, that would always be the first thing I
would I was like, seriously?
Yeah.
I was used to living in Abuja because I worked so hard. Yeah. I was used to leaving work and going to, you know, just on my way home, stopping to pick up something to eat on the way home. And then just something, anything. There was nothing here. And even the African stores went in and I couldn't see the kind of ingredients. Every single thing here came from your place, from Ghana. So it was crazy for me. And so I started cooking. I used to just make my meals and take to work. And then once in a while, one of my friends, the catalyst to the whole Niger Booker story is that I would go to work at Nordstrom, and people would ask, you know, the question they ask you when you're black, like, where are you originally from? It's a very funny question because it's like, oh, I'm trying not to offend you. I don't want to be upset. I know you could be from here, but where are you originally from? And I would laugh and go, I'm Nigerian. And they say, oh, wow, your English is amazing.
Oh, yeah, that is, yeah.
And I said, yeah, we speak English in Nigeria. They say, okay, how, or they would say, how long have you been here? And I'll say, oh, I've been here for just a year.
Yeah.
Wow, your English is amazing. And sometimes if I want to be funny, I'll go, I worked really hard. You know. But the truth is, and then because, you know, people have the need to be polite.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. That is the one thing I love Seattle about. You know, they have, they want, they have, every, they want you to feel welcome, yeah, right? But they go on to say, oh, wow, I've been to Africa. You know, or they'll say, oh, last week we went to an Ethiopian restaurant. Or they'll say, oh, I think I've had Nigerian food. You know, is that a thing with the naan that you put something on it?
Ethiopian food, yeah?
If I could get a penny for every time I had this conversation, you know. But, and then I would calmly explain to them that no, it's not.
Yeah.
Nigerian food is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Our food is like, it's like night and day. And I would explain to them, you know, ingredients and a lot of times, I found myself taking, I mean, while fitting them up, like in the fitting room, I would find myself talking about food, Nigerian culture, and, you know, basically the kind of ingredients that we use to cook and how we eat spicy food. And then they get all excited. Oh, really? I would love to try that, you know? But it still didn't click then that you should do something about it, right? I have to tell you this funny story.
Yeah.
I used to make my lunch and take to work, right, at Nordstrom. And we had, like, an employee storage. It's a kitchen. Okay. Not like a kitchen kitchen, but refrigeration and everything.
Yeah.
So sometimes I would just bring my food and put it in the fridge there, and because it's next to the lunchroom, and then go eat. But on this certain day, I was so busy that I didn't have time to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I actually closed that day. I wasn't supposed to close, but because I was so busy, I forgot I had to eat.
Okay.
So I went home, and the next day I told myself, oh, I think you have lunch from yesterday in the fridge. So when it was lunchtime, I was so hungry. I went to the room, and I looked, and I couldn't find it. And I kept wondering, where is my lunch? To give you perspective, you know, we like to tie stuff in, in nylon. Like, we like to tie stuff in. So I had packed it in a Tupperware, and I tied it up and put it in the fridge. So I turned around, I turned around because I wanted to look at the other fridge. And right there on the sink was my Tupperware open with two grains of rice. You know?
Oh, my God.
Really, really cleaned out. It was, I remember clearly I made jollof rice and goat meat.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was all cleaned out. And I said, what?
Oh, wow.
So someone, I don't know if they had been watching me eat my delicious jollof rice and goat meat or anything. I don't know what happened, but, you know, somebody ate my food. And it's not like they tried it and went, oh, I don't care for this, you know.
They finished it.
They finished it and just left it there for me. And I was supposed to be really angry. But in my head, I was like, I'm a great cook.
That's a different reaction than that. I feel like
I was upset, but, you know, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to go order, you know, get the cameras and start watching to see who ate your food or anything. But it's just funny
that... So you never found out who
was?
Oh, wow.
You know? It reminded me of that episode in Friends, you know, where Ross, I don't know if you've seen Friends, but he said, you know, you ate my sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but it was fun. So I when I came, I stayed home, and then one of my my other friend, Chini, she had her baby dedication while I was pregnant.
Okay.
And she was going to make this whole, she was inviting people back to her house. And I told her, I can cook for you. Yes, I was 6 months pregnant.
Oh, wow. Like, okay. Really heavy. Yeah.
And she said, are you sure? I said, yeah, I'll make it for you. And how I made how everything.
People, how many people was
she? I think she had a total of about maybe 40 guests. Oh, wow. 40 to 50 people.
I always get nervous. Like, I'm always impressed when people cook for groups. Like, I feel like I can't cook for more than 6 or 8 people.
You just take it one at a time. You have to be a real multitasker to be able to do something like that. And she had, you know, she tested my patience because she had an electric stove. Like a gas, you know, an electric four burner. And I was on my feet and I made this whole food. They went to church and by the time they came back, everything was ready.
Okay. What did you make? Do you remember?
I made jollof rice. I made efo, the vegetable stew. Okay. I made peppered chicken, you know, like chicken.
Yeah,
they had chicken with rub.
Okay.
I made plantains. I made moi moi.
Okay. So those are the things, like, as you're listening, I was thinking of ingredients, right? Those are easier ingredients to find, right?
They are not really, they are.
I mean, you know, I think about moi moi, you guys use
beans. Yeah, we use beans. Right? That is easy to find here, you know, but again, they have black eyed peas here, which is very difficult to clean. And it tastes a bit different from the black-eyed peas that is brown beans that we use.
Yeah, that's true.
I personally use the brown beans for moi moi because it tastes better and it has a better consistency to me. But they have black-eyed peas here and they have all the ingredients really for moi moi because they also have, you can find corned beef here if you want. There are eggs if you want to put eggs in your moi moi. There are red bell peppers, which is like an onions, which is the queen when you're doing making moi moi. Those have to be in there.
Yeah.
And some African stores sell palm oil if you want palm oil moi moi.
Yeah.
You know, so yes, they do have the ingredients here. And in Nigeria, we use like seasoning cubes. You can get those at the African store here. Okay. But I mean, boullon works well too.
Yeah,
and you don't have to crush it.
Yeah.
So yes. Yeah, so you can find ingredients here, but for special foods like efo, you know, efo riro has the locust bean.
Yeah.
So when I came here initially, when I started Niger Buka, I would go to the African store and get the locust bean, but it doesn't taste the same. Probably because it travels months and months to get here. Yeah. And then it stays for a long time at the store. Yeah. So it takes on the flavor of all the other ingredients in the store. So I import my ingredients.
Okay.
All my special ingredients I import from Nigeria, which is a whole different challenge on its own.
Okay. Yes. Interesting. Yes.
But that was the story leading up to my
starting. So you cooked at the
and everybody loved it. Everybody loved it. But I wasn't even there to get the compliments because at that time I was ready to go and lie down. I was really tired. Yes, but after that, I would experiment with foods at home to see what ingredients from here would work best for Nigerian recipes. Okay. And so one day my husband was like, maybe you should open a Nigerian restaurant. And in my head, and I said, maybe, but in my head, I was like, man, it's crazy.
So was this after a couple of years? Oh, after Nordstrom. Yeah. Okay, got it.
I started Niger Buka a few months, after Nordstrom, about maybe 8 months after I left Nordstrom. Yes, was when I started.
And then he said, open a restaurant. And you were like,
it was crazy.
Crazy.
Yes.
At this point, had you done any pop-ups or anything?
Nothing.
Just, oh, wow.
Yeah, I was just cooking. I would, another of my friend, who is, by the way, really instrumental to this whole process, Nena was, she's awesome. She moved from Seattle now. She's living in California.
Yeah.
But she was the very first person that paid me to cook.
Oh, interesting.
For her. Yeah. So, jokingly, because when my husband said that, I started thinking about it and I said, maybe there's something to what he just said. But I knew that The restaurants are crazy. I started researching, looking into it. And the regulations here had me crawling under the bed and not wanting to come out for days, you know. So I knew there was no way I could do a restaurant. But I wanted to test the waters to see, you know, what if there was a truth to this whole thing. So I created a Facebook page. And I can't remember. The first name I used was Nigerian Foods Seattle.
Okay.
Also, I created a Facebook page. And I waited. And I got likes, right? And then Nena sent me a message. And she said, can you make afang soup? And in my head, I said, yes, I can.
But so you didn't know her then? She had sent a message through your Facebook?
Yeah, she saw me on Facebook, on my Facebook page. I think it was 2 days after I created a Niger food or something page in Seattle with Facebook. And she sent me a message and she said, I've been wanting to eat afang soup. Can you make me afang soup? And I thought in my head, I had not made afang soup since I came because in Nigeria, you buy the fresh okazi leaves. Here, you have to use the dried ones at the African store. And I didn't know the dynamics. I didn't know what to do. But here is the thing. When I lived with my sister, which was the upside to the whole living with your sister thing, she is an awesome cook. On the very first month of first Saturday of every month, which is when, you know, they get paid in Nigeria, she would drag me through the markets, buying ingredients. You know, we'll go to Guagua Market, I'll go to Dutse, all these places. And I'll ask her, I said, why don't you just buy this stuff in one market? She said, no, crayfish is cheap in this market. They have a better quality. Okazi is a better quality with this customer that I have at this other market. And in my head, I was like, man, African women have a problem. You know? Then you come back from the market, and we had to cook like 4 different soups on the same day. It was crazy. But the upside, I learned. Right? So when Nena said, can you make me this soup? I said, yes. And I went to the African store and I got ingredients. And I made it for her. Like, I soaked the okazi. I didn't even know the resources you could get from Google then. But in my head, I was thinking, well, you know, I've seen dry abacha before. To use dry abacha, you have to soak it. So, of course, I mean, just soak the okazi and see how it works. So I soaked it and it came out fine, right? And then, but the other step was to make okazi soup, you have to pound.
Okay.
You have to really pound, you know, the leaves to make it. You can't use the whole strip. What is going on, you know? And then I thought to myself, blend.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and luckily, you know, see, my husband is crazy about kitchen, you know, gadgets. And so he had a Vitamix, right?
Okay. Oh, wow.
Which is like the queen of...
I tell my husband I want a Vitamix.
You need
one. He looks at the price tag and he's like, nah. He's like, you have a blend.
Next time when you talk to him, tell him I've had my Vitamix for more than 5 years.
I told him it's an investment.
He had it before I moved here. And can you imagine the amount of cooking I do? I mean, I cook out of a commercial kitchen, but I also cook a lot at home because I'm a foodie, right? I do a lot of experimenting at home. So I blended. But here's the mistake now. When I made it, because Ukazi needs like tiny or no water. They didn't have water leaves here, which is what usually moisturizes the whole soup and everything. So I had to use spinach. So if you're listening out there, spinach.
Yeah.
Then, but when I blended the okazi and added the soup, I had okazi soup swimming in water.
Oh.
So I had to start all over
again,
and experiment. But long story short, I turned up with her soup on that Saturday for her. And I was like, fingers crossed, fingers crossed, fingers crossed. And the next thing I saw was her posting on Facebook.
Well, you didn't even ask her.
Seriously. And so from there, I got, you know, like another one. And then I started thinking. And then I said, you're doing great, but the name you have on Facebook, on your Facebook page, it doesn't work. You need to think of a better name for it. And I started thinking and thinking and thinking. And in my experience, you know, growing up in from my grandma's kitchen, the stuff that I'm doing right now is not things that I learned on my own. It's watching her cook. My grandmother is like the queen of the kitchen. Mm. You know, she had this kitchen with a thatched roof. Yeah. And she used to cook with firewoods. And she would just sit in front of the firewood and grab her ingredients and, you know, just mix. Regardless of how poor we were at that time, you know, or how much ingredients we could afford, she would make you a pot of something that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I watched her do that stuff a lot. And she would tell you, I was named after her. So she would say, Ogbum, which means my namesake. She would say, Ogbum, Obe. She'll tell you, this is this. I'm putting this in this one. She'll explain the ingredients to you. She'll tell you what it does in the food. And probably because she was a talker. She was a talker. Yeah. She likes to talk to me about that whole stuff. And I would just sit. I used to sit at the doorstep and just watch her do the stuff. Mm. But I wasn't. At that point, I thought I was just watching and having fun, you know, spending time with my grandma. But looking back now, I was actually learning because a lot of the stuff I do right now is from
watching.
From what I learned from her. So I wanted the name to reflect Nigeria.
Yeah.
But I didn't want it to reflect just Nigeria to the world. Like, you know, and Niger is slang for Nigeria. Yeah. It's like, you know, ghetto Nigeria, whatever. So I wanted the ghetto food. Like, this is the best part of Nigeria.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many refined recipes right now, but the authentic thing.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, Niger. And, you know, Buka means the roadside restaurants that we have in Nigeria.
We call them chobas in Ghana.
And when I was working at Leadership Newspapers, we had this big Buka behind in Utako, behind my office. And we'll just hang out there during lunchtime because they had the best amala, begiri, and even her rice and beans and stew and her meat, so tender. It was so good. So we always hang out there. So I thought to myself, that's the kind of food I want to make. I don't want to make something that just tells somebody I'm a Nigerian food chef. I want to make food that when somebody tries it, they go, this is what I had 1,000 years ago. This is how food used to be when I was back home. So that is why I went for Niger Buka.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because people now address this. They see me and go, hi, Niger.
They think that's your name.
That's my name. Because so then they send an email and they go, hello, Niger. We have this event. And I just smile. And then I sign the email with Lillian. And they come back again and say, hi, Niger.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. We'll be right back.
It sounds like you do, I don't know if you would call it personal catering or share. Like, so you cook and send to people, for people.
Yes.
And then what are the other components of Niger Book? Like, what are the other things you've added to the business since?
So the business started out as as catering.
Yeah.
But I did the farmer's market to start.
Okay.
Yes.
So in the farmer's market, you were cooking.
I was cooking.
Pans. You had pans.
Yeah, I had pans. I had a five-well steam table that I would have the food made in a commercial kitchen. And then I did the South Lake Union farmer's market. Actually, was my first farmer's market. Yeah, that was in 2016. Yeah, the summer of 2016 was when I did the South Lake Union Farmers Market. Maybe 2017. Okay, I'm mixing stuff up. But my first day of the market, I announced it on Facebook. You know, I created an event. And within seconds, I had people just tagging other people in it and saying Nigerian food in Seattle, blah, 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 blah. So I did that market. I also did the Lake City Farmers Market. So I've done the farmer's market. I did Renton Farmer's Market last summer. And then I do a lot of corporate catering.
Okay.
Yeah, I cater, you know, I cater to, you know, Microsoft.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And, do you cater for Nigerians at Microsoft, or are you catering for Microsoft?
I have for both.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
So I've catered for when they had like a Nigerian event or an African event generally, or we also had an African event last year, and I did Nigerian jollof and Tina Gold Coast Girl. She did Ghanaian. She did a Ghana jollof. And I had told Peter, the guy that organized, I said, you need to tell us who won. You know, you guys have to vote on this. But later on, he came back and said it was a draw. I don't think so. I think Nigerian jollof won, but whatever.
I don't know. I was at Tina's event this past weekend.
Tina is awesome.
She's good.
I was supposed to come, but that's for this. Yeah. I got the ticket and everything.
Oh, anyway. No, it was good. Well, it was a good number of people. Okay, interesting.
So I did. I do that, and I also have done for the Bill Gates Foundation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you the only Nigerian?
Yes. No. I don't want to say that because I've heard people talk about other Nigerian caterers.
Okay.
I haven't met anybody else, and I don't know of any other online presence.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's the easiest way to online, know if, you know, so I don't know. I have also met somebody that said she does Nigerian food, but she was non-committal about it, you know, so I don't know if for now, I think,
You're the leading. We'll call you the leading.
Yeah. I don't want to say leading.
I am again.
I have special. You know, the other day I catered. I made 2 pounds of jollof rice for the Boeing and Microsoft picnic.
Yeah.
And then 3 days ago, I got a call from somebody at Amazon saying, we had this jollof at So-So Place and I really need it for my event. So I may actually be the official jollof caterer.
We are calling you the official Nigerian jollof caterer.
Okay.
So you're obviously now doing a wide range and variety of things. So, and some for the Nigerian community, some not. So how are people, or how are you using your food to educate people about
culture,
or even Nigerian food? Because if you're serving at Microsoft for non-Nigerians.
Yes.
Like, what is their experience? I don't know if you're there when you cater, but what is their experience with your food, and how are you sort of using that to...
Honestly, when I started this journey, first of all, I thought it was going to be, you know, a whole, just a Nigerian thing. You know, I thought people, it was just going to be me catering to the Nigerian community.
Yeah.
But the one thing I have learned over time is that my biggest customer fan base are actually Caucasians.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the other day I catered, when I did the last one I did for Microsoft, was there was no Nigerian there really. It was just Caucasians.
Interesting.
And I think a lot of it is from word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because every time I do an event, I come along with my cards and stuff, and then people pass those cards on. And the reaction I have gotten from non-Nigerians, basically, I have to say it's been 99% positive.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, what you need to do is get people to try the food.
That's the hardest thing.
I mean, when I did the farmer's market, I had people that would come up and look and go, what kind of food is that? And I'll say, Nigerian food. They'll say, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And they'll walk away. But I'll call them back and I'll explain to them, because it's one thing to say Nigerian food, and it's something else to tell them that, oh, it's Nigerian food, but it's actually ingredients that you are familiar with. It's just done in a more flavorful way, right? Yeah. So introducing my food to non-Nigerians, I use 3 keywords. It's savory.
Yeah.
You know, it's flavorful. Yeah. It can be really spicy.
Yeah. So that was my next question for you, actually, about do you tone down the spice? And when we talk spice in the African context, we mean heat.
Yes.
So do you tone down the spice level? For
a lot of times I have to.
Okay.
I have to. Because a lot of times I have to. Because I ask them specifically, when you go to place an order on my website, if you're going through my website, I have four levels of heat. There's mild, there's medium spicy, there's spicy, and there's Niger spicy.
I like that, because even my husband and I talk about this a lot. Even when you go to like other ethnic restaurants, whether it's Chinese or whatever, Indian, and you ask, and you even ask for the like highest level of spice, they're at that highest level of spice, they're still catering for the
non-tribe,
the
foreigners, I hear you. Yeah. So a lot of times, especially when I'm catering, especially in corporate catering, unless I ask specifically, usually my question is, do you want any of these dishes spicy?
Yeah.
I don't like to ask, do you want it mild? Because when I do corporate catering, especially if it's not Nigerians, it's mostly mild.
Yeah.
They want mild.
Yeah.
And if they say, you can make the beef stew spicy, but the chicken stew mild, so people have options, then I do that. Okay. And then I ask you, what level of spice? Is it like Caucasian spicy or Nigerian spicy?
Yeah.
Because it's very, very different. Yeah. Yes. I mean, we eat and we're... and we drink water and we
eat. We're sweating. Like my husband says, like you're sweating and all of that. Exactly. But it's part of the experience of our food, right?
And even the... when I cater to Nigerians or Africans with an African event, a lot of times I have had them say, you know, make it mild, because some people, you know, people that are born here, that grow up here, that even if they are Nigerians and Africans, they are not used to that level of heat. So sometimes I give them like a sauce on the side to put over. I mean, if you want it spicy, make it spicy.
Interesting. And then you talked about, I mean, even when you talked about, you know, the having your kids and all that, about being alone, like quite a bit, and especially since we're calling you the leading Nigerian catering. Like, how this is tough. Like, and we were talking earlier, like off air, about, you know, other people's stories, like Tukumbo, in London. But just how tough a journey this can be, especially when you're not at home, right? Mm-hmm. So how have you managed? Like, what are some of the challenges you've had, and how have you managed to keep yourself like sane? Because it's not easy, right? It's not easy, even if you had a great support system. Like, it's tough. So in a space where you are the one doing the educating and all of that stuff, and then just the logistics of running a business too.
It is crazy. My life is crazy. You know, I cannot remember the last time I went to sleep before 3 a.m.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm counting weekends too.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, it's a double-edged sword. That could be a good thing, meaning business is good.
Well, not necessarily. I am branching into a whole different area now. So it's either I'm in the kitchen, you know, cooking at night, or like in the commercial kitchen, because I have to, you know, that is the first struggle, you know, in Seattle. I mean, not just in Seattle, in the US.
I guess the laws. Yeah,
in Nigeria, you have, I mean, you can, it's really flexible. You could just rent a place and cook out of it if you want, or cook out of your home. Yeah, but here, the health regulations are really, really, really strict. Yeah. And I mean, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because food poisoning is horrible. Yeah. You don't want that for anybody. You don't wish that on anybody. Yeah. But at the same time, for small businesses, it just grounds you.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. You can't do much. You know, I've been joining hands with a Food Innovation Network and Ventures to talk about the home cooking. Home cooking. We're doing the home cooking series because, I mean, somebody wants to venture into catering. You're not sure yet if you want to do it, right? There's no need to go invest in a kitchen if you're not sure that this is the way you're going at the moment. You just want to test the waters and do it. I'm at that point now where the home cooking series might not work for me because of where my business is right now. But I'm hoping that it will help somebody coming up, you know, behind that wants to venture into something like this.
Right. So when you say home cooking series, are you guys trying to, lobby the government?
Yes.
To...
We are trying to put a legislation in place where people can get their home kitchen inspected.
It will
be legal for people to cook small meals from their kitchen and sell to other people. So right now there's the cottage law where you can make cookies at home as long as it's not something that is acidic. I mean, if it's not an acidic, anyway, there is a cottage law right now. But we're wanting to take it further with this legislation.
Especially when you think about the growing immigrant population and immigrants, especially who, whether it's Indian or Syrian or, whatever, that's the starting point of growing.
And how awesome their food is and how you want the world to try their food. So it's really crazy. My life is crazy because, I mean, I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old and I have a 2-year-old and they're absolutely scary. Seriously, their energy is like I feel as if when I 2 year old, when he struggles, you're holding him and he struggles with you, you feel like you're holding a 10-year old who is trying to get up. Anyway, but it's crazy, which is why I can't do too much, I haven't taken like wedding caterings, that kind of formal big events where because anything could happen.
Right.
If I'm catering your wedding, if I take your money and I want to cater your wedding and my child falls sick.
Yeah. And people get extremely emotional
about it. So then my mind is on the child who is not feeling well. My mind is, I'm kind of divided, and I bet you I will always choose my child.
Yeah.
It's just how it is.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's also the reason I can't do too much because I don't have a tribe here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're black people. I'm Nigerians, Africans. Right. We need our tribe. Right. If I were in Nigeria, I could leave my kids with my sister for 3 days. Yeah. Just leave them there and go because it's family.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here it's just me and my husband has a full-time job, just so you know.
Yeah.
So I can only do stuff when I can.
Yeah.
I have a website where people go to place their orders, and I always, on my website is written there, you have to prepare for it could be any days from 3 days to a 1 week for me to get your food to you, because I like to be transparent.
Right.
It's the thing I told you I learned about the process of doing things. I don't want to, and when people put in their order, I tell them the furthest date is going to be. I said, I may be able to get it to you on Tuesday, but it's probably going to be Friday.
Yeah.
Usually I get it to them on Tuesday. Sometimes on Monday.
Yeah.
But
you want to manage expectations.
Yeah. You don't want to disappoint people.
Right.
Because people love their Nigerian food. So, yeah, the struggle. And, it's like you don't have a social life, really. Basically, I don't have any friends. because it's all about the business.
Yeah, between and the business.
I'm by myself. I'm a one-man squad.
Yeah.
So when I used to do the farmer's market, I have this five well steam table. And if I, go to the farmer's market, and I used to drive my cargo van.
Yeah.
load the van, and then I have to offload, bring everything out and set up.
And this is all just you.
Just me. I used to have to grab that table by myself. Yeah. Still it was awkward. I cannot count the number of times I've had injuries from dragging that table around. But it's brutal to be serious. And basically, a whole lot of challenges. Not to talk about, and people, and especially the shipping stuff from Nigeria.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too.
It's horrible. I mean, because I don't know, Ghana is easy for some reason. Really? I think it's the trade relations, because of the whole, Nigerian reputation for scam.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame these people, but at the same time, Nigeria is so much more than the way it's portrayed, right? So it's shipping from Nigeria. A lot of times, the shipping doubles the amount I spend on buying the ingredients.
Oh.
Twice last year, I spent about $450 trying to get ingredients here, and then it got stuck somewhere in where was that? Was it in Washington DC airport or something? Oh, as I'm talking to you, it never arrived. Just so you know, yeah, it never arrived.
Oh my god!
This year the same thing happened. I tried to use a different courier, and I paid, and altogether it was about everything. If I have to calculate, including the ingredients I bought and everything, it was about $650. And as I talked to you, it never arrived.
Oh my god!
Yes. So it's the challenges, you know, and you try to make food. For me, Naija Bukka is not just about cooking, like cooking Nigerian food. Anybody can cook.
Right.
I go for the experience. I want you, while you're eating, to think, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I ate this kind of food. So my iru, you know, the dried ugu that I used for the egusi, the egusi itself, I have to import my suya spice.
Yeah.
I have to import its spices for the ingredients, to make the spice. Because for me, it's the experience.
Right.
I have had Nigerian food and I know what it tastes like. So I go to the African store and I buy egusi and I bring it home and I sniff and it's moldy.
Yeah.
I don't want to serve people that. I want fresh ingredients. So if I want to get ingredients here within a week, I pay through my nose.
Yeah.
And if sometimes it arrives, sometimes it doesn't. And then people come up to you and they go, why is your food so expensive?
Yeah, that's...
you know, and it's, I mean, I say people, you know, it's a lot of times it's, it, I mean, it's Nigerians that go, you know, your food is, oh, wow, really? Just, it's just jollof. It's just, and they say, it's just Nigerian food. And... jokingly, I tell them, I say, see, that kind of attitude won't get you anywhere. There's nothing like it's just Nigerian food. You can say it's just burger. It's just fries. You can't say it's just Nigerian foods because the labor involved in making Nigerian food is crazy.
Yeah.
The time you put into it, when you're not even mentioning the money you spend on ingredients, you know, and even preserving it to get it to you is a whole thing on its own. So for me, those are basic. I mean, they are not like crazy challenges that stops me from doing what I'm doing, but there are also things that, I mean, I wish were different.
Right.
Yeah. Not to talk about the disappointments you have when you have plans of things you want to do with your business and they fall through, you know.
Yeah, let's talk about the Food Innovation Network and how that fits into how you try to solve some of the challenges that you have. Let's explain to people what the Food Innovation Network is in Seattle. It's local to Seattle.
So the Food Innovation Network, I call it FIN for short, which has been my family, away from my family, basically. It's a non-profit organization that caters to immigrant women.
Okay.
You know, immigrant women wanting to venture into the food business. Like I said, the terrain for the food business here is very, very complicated. Yeah. It's very difficult to navigate. So what the Food Innovation Network does is provide you with, you know, the resources, the resources, takes you through the steps of building up your business, of actually starting your business, how to build it up. They also offer business coaching for people who need it and such. And I met the, I joined the Food Innovation Network about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had been doing my business and then I stopped after the farmer's market. After we did the farmer's market, so we're going to go do a food truck.
Okay.
It was my plan to do a food truck, and then we paid to have it built and the company went bankrupt.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I don't mean to, it's just,
no, it's okay to laugh because now I can laugh about
it. Yeah, it's like it's all the things.
And so it was like oh, really? I mean, 25K? Fiam. You know, like, so it's like, okay, back to square one. What do we do? We can, you know, it's not like we're getting that money back or anything. I'm not saying this to make you feel sad or anything, but I'm saying it because, sometimes these things happen and, you have to find a way to keep pushing if it's really what you want to do. So that happened. And honestly, I said, no more. I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to get a job.
Yeah. No, that's...
and go back to working and, you know, assurance that I will get paid. But then I was pregnant at that point and I had my second, my son. And when he was one month old, at that point, I hadn't done the business for almost 8 months or so. And I started thinking again. I said, but this is not a bad business. I'm actually, because people kept calling me for food. And I said, if I'm not doing this, people don't get food here. Yeah. These people that are calling me do not get food. It's funny because when I was thinking at that point, it wasn't about the money I was making. I wasn't making anything from the business at that point. So I started researching and I knew I couldn't afford the regular kitchen, right? Because when I was doing the farmer's market, here's the deal. Per month, I was paying $850 for a month to work out of a commercial kitchen.
No.
Yeah. So you calculate, there are 4 markets in a month, right? And I was paying $850. And there was a cap on, I think, 25 hours or so. You couldn't do more than 28 hours a week or so.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So that is how expensive it is. If you're going to rent per hour in Seattle, it's $30, $20, depending on what you're doing, you know, per hour. So it was that crazy. And I knew there was no way I could do that, especially because I had a 1 month old and I wasn't sure if this was something I even wanted to go back to yet. So I found the Food Innovation Network. I found them online and I sent them a message to see if I could use their kitchen because they partner with Project Feast in Kent to kind of give you subsidized rates on kitchen for you to use because they are non-profit. Yeah. So I reached out to them and that is where my fame journey started. So I haven't been able to do any of the business coaching because of, you know, splitting time between business and kids. Yeah. But they have been amazing at getting my business, you know, the visibility.
Yeah.
So before Finn, I used to cater to, you know, Nigerians, basically Africans.
Yeah.
But with Finn, because they get
a whole new market.
Yeah, they get you visibility. It opened a whole new market of, you know, Caucasians who are looking for ethnic foods.
Yeah.
Because Finn has a platform where they take requests for us, for people doing ethnic food, you know. Yeah, so they are doing such a great job.
Yeah.
And I am so excited for the next chapter because we're moving on now to do the Tequila Food Hall.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, which is going to be like a mall.
Yeah.
It's a mall. We're just a food mall.
Interesting.
So we're going to have... Niger Buka is going to have a kiosk there.
Okay, good. Yeah. Nice.
So I plan to have a kiosk. So they have kiosks with ethnic food.
So you'd have a place to go to every day. Where
every day, if you were looking... I mean, if you're craving... ethnic food, you know, baklava, all the chapati, Kenyan food. I'm sure we think we're getting a Ghanaian person. So you will have a place to go to.
Oh, and
so the project is slated to be completed next year.
Okay.
And we're doing a whole fundraising thing right now, which is why I have a pop-up at Bon Buna next week where you can come and buy food just to support the Food Innovation Network and all the proceeds go to them.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just donating my time and efforts and all that. So, so that's what the Food Innovation Network does.
Interesting. Yeah, we should talk about it offline because I'd like to be involved because of some other stuff I'm working on around food innovation. That's great. That's really, really awesome. Also wanted to talk about your other products that you have. So you have like...
So lately, actually it's been for years, I started working on some sauces because the number one idea I got about this was that it was because I couldn't do a quick turnaround for people when they wanted food.
Okay.
You know, like my Nigerian people are very funny.
Yeah.
They call you and they're like, I want food. And tonight. I say, okay. when do you want it? Ah, now, can I come and pick it now? I'm like, no. I'm not a restaurant. Yeah, so I'm not able to do that quick turnaround because, number one, you need time to rent the kitchen I'm going to walk out of. And then, I mean, I also have the kids who I can't just leave at a last-minute notice. So I got the idea of the making sauces that people can use at home.
Yeah.
Not just sauces, products basically that people can use at home. And my jollof sauce and the stew sauce are the first in the line of products that I made. I started working on these about 3 years ago, actually. I started and then I stopped.
Okay.
Because I got discouraged and everything. But I had Nena was my tester. She was the one person I would refine the recipe and take to her, and of course Patrick too, my husband, and take to her, and I'd be like, Nena, try this. But the reason Nena was my biggest tester is because she grew up in Nigeria,
so she knew what
these sauces are, jollof rice, supposed to taste like, you know. And finally, she said, when I took one to her the next time, she sent me a message and said, okay, I'm ready to buy. We are ready.
So are you keeping notes on like how you're tweaking it each time?
Okay, yes, I am. Because it was a whole process. Yeah. But now it's out and you can basically make... So usually when you want to make jollof rice or stew, it takes forever because, you know, with African food, the whole process is just gruesome. It's like cooking. It's like cooking Mexican tamales from scratch.
From scratch,
So you have to cook down the stew, cook this and that and that. What this sauce has done is basically done all that homework for you. So
you can use the jollof sauce to bake it.
Exactly. So I mean, you put the rice. You can bake it in the oven. Rice in the oven in a pan. Pour the sauce. Two cups of water or three cups of water. I mean, don't listen to me. Follow the recipe on the recipe card. So you add that and you just bake in the oven, and voila, you have jollof sauce.
I'm gonna do it. Jollof rice,
and the biggest part of it is instant pot. You know, that's my instant pot sauce recipe. It's easy. Just dump everything in the instant pot or your rice cooker.
Yeah,
and walk away. Just set it and you come back and you have awesome jollof rice.
Oh my God, I'm going to try tonight and I'll try the video.
So it's my other, that is my way I'm headed now, you know, because I can't do a restaurant. It's not in the books for me. Yeah. I mean, I've had people come and walk. I had somebody who came up to me because I think she's planning to do something about a restaurant.
Yeah.
And she came up to me at one of my pop-ups and asked about if I'm going to do a restaurant and that. And I said, no, why do you ask? And she said nothing, you know. But I think she's a caterer, right? And I said, if you're thinking about a restaurant, you really should do it. Because I am all for supporting people. I mean, there's so much market out there.
It's a big market,
right? But it's not in the books for me right now because it's really, really expensive to start with. And I don't want to take a business loan, you know, to do a restaurant because I have two kids and something could go wrong. You know, so it might not make it. So I'm moving towards the packaged foods life now so that people can have these. I want everybody to have access to Nigerian food. I want you to have it in your pantry, have it in your fridge, and eat it when you want to, basically.
Oh, good. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Now I'm excited to try it. So, I mean, people can see, obviously, but you bought me some stews and whole kit. Yeah, so I'm going to check it out. And I really like the idea of this meal kit, actually.
It's easy.
Good stuff. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on was the new series that you said you were going to be working on,
Nigerian food traditions. Okay. So about that. I don't know. Do you guys have Sunday rice where you come from? Is that a term you use at all?
Sunday rice? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Nobody should come after me. I don't think so.
Okay. So I think the Nigerian food traditions is there are lots of bad things are said about Nigeria. Yeah. You know, there's so many things happening. And yes, I mean, we earn all that bad publicity. It's not like there are no bad things happening elsewhere, but I can understand why Nigeria would be always on the news about all the horrible stuff happening. I get that. But the one thing that has been constant to Nigerians is food. We love food.
Yeah.
You can't take that from us, right? Yeah. So growing up, I lived a lot with my grandma. And for me and her, it was about food, right? Just she loved cooking. She loved feeding people. you know, they were, we had mentally challenged people that they used to hang around the marketplace because our house was so close to the market. And it was very normal at lunchtime to see them making their way towards my grandma's house because she always had food ready for them. She always had kunu. Kunu is like a Nigerian drink that she would offer to you. Even if it was the last thing she had in her house, she would give it to you. And then my mom was working. So even when we moved from Opoga and we moved to Otupo to Boko, the one thing she used to do on weekends that I remember clearly, she was very busy. She was very busy. Yeah. She was a nurse, right? Was that she would make stew on weekends.
Well, so that she could use...
through the week.
Yeah.
She would make stew. She would go, we had, you know, the grinding, the meal. You go grind it, she would make the stew. And on Sundays, lunch was rice and stew. Okay. I mean, we used to... dinner, food was a very special thing. And she would insist, during every mealtime, you had to sit down and eat. And you had to talk about your week.
Yeah.
You know, she would go from anything from... how are you feeling about the new week to your test results? It could escalate quickly to you crying or something, because I mean, she was, or she could go from there to tell you to spell rice or whatever you were eating. She was like that. But it was the one time when we actually had her, you know, sitting down with us, concentrating on us, and you know, just basically enjoying the meal. And and for me, the best time I looked forward to was on Sundays, which was the Sunday rice after Mass.
Okay.
You go for Mass, and believe me, churches in Nigeria are long.
Yeah.
It goes on
people,
forever.
Like when my mom comes here and she goes for 1 hour, she's always like shocked.
And it's sunny, and we are tired, and we are hungry. But you know, the one thing that would keep you going is Sunday rice. You know, and that tiny piece of meat you get on the rice, it was so much fun. So for me right now, the Sunday rice, which is the first in the series, is about bringing people together. Okay. It's not just coming to eat rice. And yes, we are going to have all kinds of rice dishes there with all kinds of meats, you know, because we love meat. Yeah. But it's about sharing the tradition.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a great one at doing it at Carnation Farms, and because it's a really traditional venue for me. Quiet, natural landscape. Yeah. You know, the landscape is beautiful. It's a farm, basically. It is the kind of place I grew up. It is the kind of place a lot of us grew up, you know, even though we are here right now. So I want people to experience, to just disconnect from all the buzz of the city. Come back, come down, and leave your hands, your phones in the car. Just come and eat.
Oh, nice. When is this going to be?
It's going to be on the 22nd.
Oh,
at Carnation Farms. Okay. Yeah. So I will have, I have tickets on, my website and everything, and, on, Eventbrite. So I plan to do some more series.
Okay.
Just featuring
different sorts of Nigerian
food traditions. You know, what we like to eat, how we like to eat it.
No, that's a really good idea. Yes. And especially for, I feel like it would work for in a place like Seattle, where now that there's, you have a core market, people have tried your food. Now adding the more, like, what more is there about the food that they need to learn and tying it into the food experience. That's cool. Good stuff. Before we wrap up, like, what's the next big thing for Niger Buka? So we know you're not going to do a restaurant. We know you have the sources. Like, what's next for when you look at the next 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? What do you
see
as the next big thing?
I think that for me right now, I think that I would like to say, regardless of where Niger Buka goes from here, I feel like it's already a success story.
Yeah.
You know, I see where I'm coming from. You know, my village, which was, by the way, I have to stress this, awesome growing up in the village. I had a tribe.
Yeah.
I had like awesome friends that I could relate with. But coming from where I was, you know, scaling all these challenges and being here right now, my next step was supposed to be opening a place. I was going to open a store where I would sell, people would come in to buy food. I would sell like packaged food for people to come and buy. But that deal fell through.
Okay.
I know. Like, because I mean, I had rented the place. We had actually outfitted the whole place with refrigerations and everything. And it was supposed to work out. But somehow they couldn't figure out events or something for the, anyway, it's a whole story I don't want to go into, but it's just another one of those things that I keep telling you about, that it happens, right? So from where I'm going right now, again, is packaged foods.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm doing a lot of collaborations, okay, with people that are willing to collaborate with startups like me.
Yeah.
Because, since the restaurant is not in the book for me, but I still want to get Nigerian food out there. I still want to share the tradition with people. I still want Nigeria to not be about the scams.
Yeah.
You know, to not be about the, you know, the, prince from Nigeria who keeps writing the emails and all that. I want that, I would like the focus shifted from that, from the negativity, you know, to the something positive.
Yeah.
I want people to understand that Nigerian food is not naan, it's not Nigeria, it's not Ethiopian food. I want to get Nigerian food out there. I want people to try it. I want people to have a kit. Like, I have the egusi kit too. You know?
So this is the jollof
kit. That's the jollof and stew kit. Okay. And I have egusi kit and I'm making all the other kits that I'm making.
This is a really good idea. Like I said, I'll take a video and share with people so they see it. I think this is a really good
idea. So you can share this tradition with your family. Yeah. You can share it with people and tell them that. Oh, so when I tell you I'm from Nigeria, I don't want you to say, oh, I heard about all the stuff going on there with the Boko Haram. Yes, stuff is going on and it's terrible and we feel sad about it. But we really do not want to be reminded every time about it. We need you to see the positive side of what Nigeria is all about, which is togetherness, which is community. You know, we are a community. So yeah, so I'm excited for the next chapter. Collaborations with dinners, and I'm going to be hosting some cooking shows with sauces too, and then I'll have my packaged food out there. And I'll be doing some wine collaboration.
I'm excited for that. So, and I have other good reasons to be in Seattle
and everything. So I am excited about the next chapter. And finally, I feel like I see where this business is going, because I have just been, you know, dilly-dallying and doing all kinds of things.
I think that not to the skill that you've had, obviously, but like I've also, in some ways, I've also dilly-dallied and done a lot of different
things.
I am a jack of all trades. And I think that, like, all those experiences, like, there are things I try and I decide, well, I'm not going to do that again. But it's all part of the learning process to get you to the point where you have a clearer vision for what you actually want to do. So, I mean, those things I don't think are in vain, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it helps those mistakes you never made again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know how I, 3 weeks ago, I was so tired and I wasn't feeling fine, and somebody paid for food on my website, and I was supposed to add it to my calendar, food I was delivering for lunch. And then I slept off before adding it, and I totally forgot about that order, and I missed out on that one. And I had to, they had to start calling me when the meeting started. It was the first time it has ever happened to me. But like I said, you learn.
Yeah.
And it's never going to happen again because now I know. I have designated it to my niece. I said, you need to put everything on my calendar every single day.
Yeah.
So it takes a village.
It's really. All exactly. Yeah. So, no, this is great. I'm like this, this is great. Like, I think the things you've overcome to get to this point, incredible. And I think that, like, what's in store for you is great. And now that I'm in Seattle, like, I'm happy to help. Like I said, I have a lot of time in my hands. I'm happy to help in whatever way you need. But before we transition to the rapid fire segment, can you let people know where they can find you online, social media? What are your handles, website?
Okay, so of course, my business is Nigerbuka, and my website is www.nigerbukaseattle.com, and you can actually just go on there and order food, because I kind of simplified the process for you to do that, and I am really excited that I have a ton of regular clients. Yeah. This guy is keeping me on my feet. Then on Instagram, again, Nigerbuka, and on Facebook, Nigerbuka. Yeah. it. And we're on Twitter too. I'm still just getting the hang of
Twitter. Yeah, Twitter is, it took me a while to get into it, but once you get into it, it can be addictive.
I am just now starting to do Twitter. Please follow us on Twitter so that I can read tweets. Thank you. And for all our events, please check our social media. I'm always posting on Facebook, on Instagram, and I think I'll start tweeting.
Tweeting.
Yeah. And on Eventbrite, you can buy our tickets to Niger Buka.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So we wrap up the interview very quickly with five quick rapid fire. I'm sure you've heard them if you listen to the podcast. I'm sure you're familiar. So we'll start with a couple of easy ones and some questions. So, Instagram or Twitter? Now that you've started getting into Twitter.
Instagram
still, by far, yeah.
Because I'm still not used to Twitter. Okay. Yes.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
What do you like to cook when you're feeling lazy?
When I'm feeling lazy. Wow. I'm seeing a whole new side of me.
Like, you don't have time, or you just even don't...
pull out my jollof and stew sauce and make something sweet. But I'm not kidding.
That's a good one.
I'm not kidding. Yesterday, I made stew like that.
Okay.
Yeah, within 10 minutes, it already.
Let's see. What's your biggest pet peeve?
You know, I just can't... Whining.
Yeah. And even from your story, it sounds like something happens to you. You just move on.
Yeah, it's okay to whine. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I will sympathize with you. See, but you know, I'm not good with criers. Just so you know, I get uncomfortable around people that cry.
Yeah.
But when you whine and you don't just whine and you put it on social media. And you invite us to wine with you, and then people ask you what is going on, and you're like, it's a private thing. Then it gets. I just think that everything is a lesson, and you should just, wine a little, be sad, of course, mourn the loss or whatever it is, and then move on. Of course, we are not talking about human beings lost, but we're talking about like material stuff, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the last question for you is, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
Kids. That would be the shortest question, you know, because I mean, when they are up, you are up, basically. But what gets me out of bed in the morning is just the motivation just to be better. Because looking back again, I can't stress this enough. So looking back at where I'm coming from and seeing all the hard work that has led to this point, and seeing all the support that I have. So I would like to say that basically it's my clients, you know, my regular clients, the people that believe in me, people that have me on their speed dial. I don't take them lightly. They are the ones that get me out of bed to do better, because they are always there, you know, sharing my information with other people, boosting my business and saying, hey, you can do it. Go, go, go. Oh, you want to pick up that boat? Pick it up.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, you know, and my biggest cheerleader is my husband, of course.
Good stuff. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to speak to you. It was great. I'm glad we got to do this in person.
Thank you.
And I hope people find Niger Buka online. This is great. Like, I'm new to Seattle, so I'm glad I have a Nigerian food connection.
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Thank you.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.